I am Randy Christman, one of the commissioners here at the commission. Our chair, Julie Fedorchek, is calling in virtually. Welcome, Julie. And it is February 1st, 2022. This is XL Energy Transmission Cost Recovery case, and the case number is PU-21-396. I've introduced the commissioners. I'll start with staff and have everyone go around and introduce yourselves into the microphone for a record.
Brian Johnson, PSC staff.
Adam Renfin, PSC staff.
And Brian or Adam, is anyone else from staff participating in the meeting remotely that are going to have questions or anything?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, and then Dave.
Dave Cedarquist with XL Energy, and we've got some folks on the on the line as well who should introduce themselves. Go ahead, guys.
Benjamin Halama, XL Energy. I'll try to leave my camera on, but I have had a little connection issues, so it might flip off, but I'll try to get back on.
And this is Chris Bubaltz with XL Energy. I'm a project manager. I am going to try to avoid turning my camera on. Dave knows I'm in a active home remodel and moving today. Well, I don't want to be a distraction.
Thanks, Chris.
This now, is Rebecca Eiler.
Now you've intrigued us all, but other than that, Chris.
Go ahead, Rebecca.
This is Rebecca Eiler with XL Energy as well.
Okay.
Rebecca, what's your last name again?
It's Eilers, E-I-L-E-R-S.
Okay, thank you. There you go. Okay, go ahead and just take it away.
All right.
Unless Commissioner Fedorchek, did you have any opening comments?
I don't. Thank you, though.
I don't either. So, okay. So go ahead, Dave.
Thank you, Commissioner. I did want to just start off by...
Before you start, yep. Could I just say that I just want to emphasize that informal hearing involves only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we'll wrap up and issue a notice of hearing.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I just wanted to start by thanking staff for some assistance that they gave us with this presentation. In his review of our filing, Adam prompted us to find and make a correction that resulted in about an $83,000 reduction in the TCR test year. So we subsequently filed an adjustment, and that's reflected in this presentation. He also had some really good suggestions for us for our presentation, so we took that to heart and we've made some changes there. And then also Vic was gracious enough to print out some hard copies of our presentation this morning. I had to make some late changes in my travel plans last night. I didn't have my act together enough to have everything printed and everything last night, so he was nice enough to do that printing for me this morning. So with that, I will...
Thanks for acknowledging them. It's no surprise to us. we're just blessed with a tremendous staff. And
yeah, if I could interrupt, but you know, everyone at Excel has been really great at helping me put this together, and they've really done a lot of legwork on that. So thanks to Dave and his team on that one.
And I think some of the suggestions we're kind of looking at, hey, how can we do this better next year in our filing, too? How can we, you know, provide the kind of information that Adam was looking for in a more proactive way? So we're kind of taking a look at that. So, Matt, can I see the presentation or how? There we go. Okay.
1 second here.
Okay, great. We always include this second slide. I'm not going to speak to it, but this is the statute that controls our development of our TCR rates, so it's just included here for your reference. Just an overview of what we filed for this year. We are in adding 10 new projects and one new transmission program to our TCR test year in 2022. And I am going to talk a little bit more about the distinction between projects and programs a little bit later in the presentation. But the overall revenue requirement that we're forecasting for 2022 is just under $1.4 million. And this would increase the TCR rate a little bit. These amounts are very small, but it would increase it from 1/100 of a cent, a little over 1/100 of a cent, to a little over 0.06 of a cent, and that results in a typical residential bill impact of going from about 10 cents to about 48 cents a month. So that's the change from the present rate to what we're proposing for 2022. And you'll recall that last October, when we rolled the lion's share of the TCR revenue requirements into our base electric rates, concurrent with the implementation of final rates from that rate case, that was in October. And in that case, we also were authorized a different ROE. We were authorized a 9.5% ROE, which is a little lower than the 9.85 that we had used previously. So that's the second change there. This slide 4 is a table that shows our history, at least the last 5 years of our TCR history. You can see here that the bill impacts have generally ranged from around $1.50 to $3 per month. And then you'll note in 2021 that for 9 months of the year, you know, we had one rate, and then again in October, we rolled over most of the projects into base rates, and kind of that brought us down to sort of a restated annual TCR revenue requirement of around $289,000. And again, the bill impact was about 10 cents a month. So that's where we still are today with the rate. On slide 5, we list here the new projects and the one new program that we're forecasting in 2022. They're all described in the application. We give a paragraph or two description. I'm gonna just point out a couple of things that I'll highlight here, and then if you have any questions about any of these projects, maybe Chris can address those. First of all, I want to talk about this Helena sub to Scott County sub transmission line, which is, you know, by far the largest new project here on the list. The project is required by MISO to increase the capacity of the company's existing 16-mile 345 kV line between these two substations. The project involved a rebuild of the line segment, including new poles and conductors, and the capacity upgrade enables a transfer of power from 4 wind generating facilities down in that area. So the second thing I wanted to highlight is the new program, ELR program, is End of Life Replacement Program. And again, I'll touch on that a little bit more in a few minutes. But this one is dedicated to steel poles. And so what we're looking at here is the program is going to initially address the deterioration of the protective surface coating on a number of steel transmission poles that were originally installed in the 1980s. We're seeing paint peeling, and there's exposure of the steel surface, and that's led to some corrosion, which, of course, would generally and ultimately lead to further deterioration of these structures. So the work that's involved and that's being funded by this program is repainting some of the poles, replacing others with new galvanized or weathering steel structures, and in some cases, we're actually reconstructing the concrete foundations. So these two new, the one new project and the one new program, comprise over 70% of the new revenue requirements that we're projecting for 2022. So let's talk a little bit about programs, and this is something that Adam encouraged us to kind of cover a little bit more, because we've had them for a while in the TCR, we just haven't spent a lot of time describing them. I will say that at the end of your presentation, your printout there, there's some appendices, or there's an appendix there that has further descriptions, but I'll talk a little bit about it. Unlike the individual projects that we include in the TCR, which typically have a unique purpose and they have a specific start and end date and that kind of thing, transmission programs are generally intended to address the overall health of our transmission assets, and they're ongoing in nature. And what I mean by that is we will budget program funds each year going forward in each of these programs. But the specific and sort of similar sub-projects within each program aren't often identified until at some later point in time. So why do we do this? Well, this funding approach is really pretty useful because it provides for more flexibility in our budgeting and in our work management. There are sub-projects within each of these programs, and they can be reprioritized. We can accelerate them or push them back from a timing perspective. And where it's needed, where there are more urgent projects that are needed, they can be funded and addressed without having to wait for the next budget cycle. So there's a lot of advantages to the establishment of these programs. And over the past few years, the company has established 13 different, I'm calling them asset health type programs, and they can be really grouped into four main categories, if you will. We have our asset renewal programs, we have our end-of-life replacement programs, our storm and emergency programs, and then we have a kind of another box here for what I'll call special purpose programs. They're typically tied to some kind of mandate or requirement. For example, we have a NERC Order 754 requirement that we have established a program for to complete that. But within these 13 programs that you see listed here, there are currently over 350 identified sub-projects. They're similar. They're grouped and managed consistent with their respective program objectives, and that's sort of the beauty of our program. So I'm thinking there could be some questions at this point about programs, and so I'll just kind of open it up if anyone has a question about that. Chris Buboltz works with these all the time and has a really good knowledge. So is there a question at all about what these are intended for?
Well, my question is kind of theoretical, I guess, but it seems like this is a growing thing, these programs. And what's the distinction between just normal maintenance of a system that should have been covered and that you should have the ability to do within your rate case and is part of just a process of managing your system, as opposed to these more, I don't know, unique or special projects that come in through the separate rider?
Okay. Chris, did you hear the commissioner's question, and can you address that?
Yeah, I did hear it. So I think the distinction for me, the way I understand it, would be the difference between our operating and maintenance budget versus the actual replacement of capital assets here. And what we're capturing in these asset health programs, especially in the asset renewal, end of life, and the storm and emergency, is the replacement of actual capital units versus non-FERC account capital or non-FERC account units or assets that can't be capitalized. So we do have an O&M budget, obviously, that we are doing maintenance. This is the next version of that. So it's an actual replacement of an asset unit or a property unit. And you are correct, Commissioner. This is a very growing area, our asset health. It is an area of focus within the next, at least within the next five planned budget years, where we are increasing investment in our asset health across the system, not only in the NSP system, but I'm seeing it in our other operating companies as well.
Are some of these things that maybe should have been, excuse me, foreseen in the rate case and planned for? Or I'm really trying to figure out where this is evolving to.
I'm trying to think of, I don't have the context of seeing in the rate case.
Are some of these, I mean, in rate cases, you kind of plan, there's certain things that you intend to do, and we build a rate structure that allows you to do those. Are some of these replacements things that we should have been aware of potentially in the last rate case already and addressed, as opposed to dealing with them as they come up.
Commissioner, I think maybe I can take a shot at that. I think that our rate cases have in the past reflected these kinds of projects to some degree, but you know, in between rate filings, the TCR offers us an opportunity to include them on an annual basis and get them in. So it's not like these haven't been included in rates in some form or another. Does that help at all, or?
I think so, and like I'm just gonna pick one out. So about the fifth one down there, you have a transformer. So mm-hmm. That's the full cost of it. We're paying for that this year in this rider. That isn't just a payment, and then there's subsequent payments on that going forward. Is it?
These are the revenue requirements associated with investments that have been made and that will be made in 2022. So we have depreciation, we have all those costs that get generated from the investment. This is the 2022 edition of those costs.
Okay.
Randy, I have a
go ahead.
I have a question.
I am just done with mine.
Okay, thank you. Mine is kind of a follow-up to yours, because I'm thinking the same things that you are, just in terms of trying to better understand how these, you know, what's the boundaries on this programs. What does I need to ask our staff, what is the language establishing the transmission rider say about what types of costs are going to be included in that rider?
Yeah, we can pull that up here in one second.
Okay. I was just going to go back to see if our slide was detailed enough. I think it's pretty generalized language, if I'm not mistaken, in the statute that includes any electric transmission investment.
Did you have other questions while Brian's looking that up?
Well, I might have follow-up questions based on that, but I guess, you know, it concerns me to an extent that this could be just an area where a lot of costs are just land to get immediate recovery rather than having to go through a rate case. And I don't know that that's a danger of riders to begin with. So I think we want to make sure that we're providing some boundaries on what is and isn't appropriate to be collected in this rider, and what needs to be either captured under current rates or justified through a rate increase.
So, Julie, if I'm understanding your question, it says, for purposes of this section, it allows an adjustment of rates to recover jurisdictional capital and operating costs incurred for new or modified electric transmission facilities. For purposes of this section, that includes electric transmission line, other transmission line equipment, including substations, transformers, other equipment constructed to improve the power delivery capability or reliability of the electric transmission system, and operating costs, including federally regulated costs charged to or incurred by public utility to increase regional transmission capacity or reliability.
Okay. So, staff, do you read that to be basically anything that the company deems to be transmission-related they can recover through this rider?
I think I would agree that it is very broad. I mean, if you take a look at like their new communications program, could that land under the condition that they are actually improving service And if yes, then to what extent? So I think maybe it comes down to that one that might be a little iffy. I can certainly see how they want to have, I think most of the communication system has been built around security type requirements and not using third party communication lines.
And what I'm sorry if that's one of the programs listed there. I can't see all those right now. Is that one of the programs? What communication system are you talking about, Adam?
Right, so that's the communications network. And I've got a data request on that, but I think if I could maybe just get Chris to maybe talk to that, he'd probably do a lot better job.
Is that included in this tariff or in this rider?
Yes, it's one of the 13 programs.
Okay, yeah, so to discuss how that relates to just the transmission system, I think would be helpful to know.
Yeah, the basics of it is it's privatizing the communication network for communication across our service territory. So wherever possible at all transmission and distribution substations for SCADA teleprotection and remote engineering access. Specifically, the program addresses the aging analog circuit technology and other technology that is going to become obsolete here. So we've been notified by our telcos that they are not going to have this analog circuit available to us anymore. So now it's looking at, okay, how are we going to be able to see in for our SCADA teleprotection, you know, our relay protection and that stuff at these different substations. It allows us to build a secure communication architecture for physically isolated operational technology and then informational technology networks from each other to support the islanding of energy management system. And then that gives us the further cyber security for resiliency on our system. So now we are in control of that system. And there's really two parts to it. There's the actual physical work that's occurring is we are putting fiber optic shield wire, so OPGW, in locations or on existing transmission lines. So replacing regular conductor shield wire with a shield wire that has a core of fiber optic with fiber optic. And then along with that, there is the communication equipment or it's usually minor at each substation, but there's a communication equipment upgrade that's required at each of these substations to build this network. Outside of that, you know, to try to leverage some cost, there's within this program, there's it's called dark fiber. So there's nothing nefarious about it. It's dark fiber is fiber optic cable that is existing in the ground that falls within the range of our network substations, the way that we want to build this kind of this bubbled ring range of the network. So it's fiber optic cable that's existing that is dark. It's not lit up, right? So fiber optic cable, you know, bounces itself through the glass fibers that are in the ground. What we're doing is we're leveraging relationships with companies that have existing dark fiber in the network area, and then for all intents and purposes, it's a lease, or it looks like we are the owner of those fibers within that bundle, where we have control of it. However, that third party is responsible for the overall maintenance of that existing fiber optic network for those connections. So it's a very involved
communications project. How much do you deem is transmission related?
We are only including, so we only include the transmission costs on transmission assets in this program. So I'd have to look I have to look to see what we have included in the TCR for the program, but 100% of the costs that are shown in this filing are transmission related.
Okay. All right. Well, back to staff, I guess. You all have scoured this filing and these programs. Tell me your comfort level with this approach and including having these programs included in here. If you see that it's perfectly appropriate, if you see a trend that you're concerned about, what's your take on it?
Well, this is Adam here, and when I had them take last year's TCR filing and compare it to this year's TCR filing, and I had them add up their entire five-year forecast around programs, and knowing that some of them are new, so you know you tend to get maybe one more year added because the program, some of them are new. However, you know, if I'm looking at it, you know, they are, you know, it is increasing. Let's see if I have a number here. This is across all of the MSPM system. They added about $448 million to them. Is that how much that's growing? Is that what UC did?
And are you looking at the long range for the 5-year forecast?
Yeah, right.
Correct. So that's through 2026. Those expenditures.
Correct.
Yep. That's on a system wide basis.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I think it's something to take a look at because everything in here, every program, eventually becomes a project.
Yeah, I will say, Commissioner, you don't see this list. There are it's showing the revenue requirements of totaling about $921,000 for 2022, and I know that last year in our 2021 TCR filing, we had submitted just under 1 million, so a little bit more in terms of revenue requirements. Now, some of those were, you know, moved into base rates in October, but just from a sort of a straight comparison, it's the programs that we are including in the 2022 are not generating really much of a different revenue requirement in 2022 than they did in 2021. So it's not like there's this ramping up in comparison to the last year.
And I think one of the things that I worry about more is I don't know if there's anything that sets or constrains the definitions, but in the previous slide, when you look at the programs divided into four key groups, and under asset renewal, I see major line rebuilds. I mean, in a couple years, could there be a major line rebuilt that's $100 million itself and just gets dropped in here in a rider? It just seems like that, and some of these others too, but that one especially, are pretty broad definitions.
I can, Commissioner, address a little bit of that. So even internally, we have these governance thresholds. So a large project, say $100 million, and actually I'll go as far to say any project, any individual project that would, you know, meet the criteria of one of these programs, that's over $8 million. We split out individually from this program. So we might reallocate some budget from the program to this specific discrete project that's identified and bring that through individually rather than trying to keep it kind of under this umbrella of the program. And that's really not, it's selfishly, it's for internal visibility so that I, as kind of this, our overall portfolio manager can see what our major projects are, what our really large projects are, and obviously we have some constraints internally with governance that needs to happen on those.
An $8 million system-wide, is that threshold?
Yes, yep.
So then those would show up as discrete projects in our TCR as opposed to part of a program, so.
Yes.
Dave, I have a question. The statute does say, and this kind of gets along to what Julie, I think, was asking staff here too. If I heard Bill right, you guys are trying to use a bunch of existing fiber and other things that are out there rather than construct it. The statute, you know, kind of does state that other equipment constructed to improve the power delivery capability and reliability of the electronic transmission system. How does using existing infrastructure like fiber optic or the dark fiber or whatever, how is that construction that would fit into the statute?
Chris, you want to take a shot at answering how that work is improving?
Yeah, I mean, so the equipment, again, it's really the equipment for the last connection termination that when we're using existing or another company's dark fiber is what's being included in any expenditures that you're seeing here. But the benefit that we're getting is this secured communication network that is increased resiliency, increased reliability from what we have as an analog circuit today versus now having a fiber optic circuit after this is built. And now we control the security on the system versus relying on a third party telco company. On top of that, we are no longer paying those operating costs to that third party telco, right? It's not shown in these costs. I'm not sure where Business Systems, which is our business partner here, how the contract or negotiation or costs for utilizing that dark fiber is. But it is not here in these transmission costs. We are looking purely at assets, transmission owned capital property units as part of this program.
Okay, so it's not the dark fiber itself, it's the equipment on one or both ends for you guys to utilize that for your communication system?
Very true, yes, very true. It's internally, it's called the last mile.
And I'd say the company appreciates the concerns of Commissioner Fedorchak and you, Commissioner Chrisman. And as I indicated earlier, that's kind of why, you know, we're trying to take a look at how can we file these applications in a way that maybe provides a little more transparency on these programs and what kind of information, you know, will help you guys see the changes or, you know, look a little bit closer at some of these. So we appreciate your concerns around that and attempting to see what we can do to help you, have oversight over that.
But have you had these for 10 or 20 years and we just never really talked about it much before? Are more things being put into this category as opposed to waiting for the next rate case? Or why does this seem to be growing?
Chris, can you talk at all to the sort of history of these types of programs? Are they?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So I've been with Xcel Energy for 10 years, and they've existed at least in the 10 years that I've been with the company. I believe they were introduced into the North Dakota TCR in about 2017, and really it was a function of volume. I think I was working with our internal transmission regulatory staff and looking at what the statute and wholeheartedly agree that the broadness of the statute made it difficult to include the volume of individual projects each year. So as Dave mentioned, just the approximate number, and I could give exact numbers, without these kind of broader programs that we're showing here, we would be adding and describing approximately 350 more individual discrete projects as part of this petition that fall under the major line rebuild or the major line refurbishment, end of life replacement, those projects, those programs, there are individual discrete projects within each of those. So it's a volume of quote unquote smaller projects that make up these programs that are ongoing over time.
Anything else on the programs? Got quite a few more slides here.
Okay. Randy, is there more slides, did you say?
Yeah, I think there's about 20 and we're on 7.
Actually, we just have a few more to go. Some of those are just sort of reference slides for you.
Okay, so yeah, did you have any other questions?
I'm just going to ask, because maybe they're coming up in the slides, do you dig down at all into the MISO charges in any of the future slides?
We don't dig down into them, but Ben Chalama is in this meeting and can address any specific questions you have about RECB.
Well, I'll let you guys finish, and then I'll see if it's covered, and we'll come back to that.
Sure. And I am moving to slide 8 right now, and this slide attempts to summarize at a pretty high level kind of what is driving the change from the revenue required amount that's used to drive the current rate that we're under right now to the ones that we are proposing for 2022. So we'll start right at the top there. The $8,831,000 was the revenue requirement that we filed a year ago when we put forth our 2021 TCR application. And then, as you know, we moved most of the projects to base rates in October. And so you see on this table here a reduction of $8,542,000, which kind of gives us an adjusted 2021 TCR test year amount of only $289,000. And that's why the rate is so small now and has been small since October. I have to keep in mind that there are still about 11 projects that remain in the TCR after the move to base rates, because the projects that we moved into base rates were those that were in service prior to 2021. So if a project went in service during 2021, it stayed in the TCR rider. So that we have those 11 projects that have previously been approved as TCR projects. And then, of course, we have all of the programs, which, you know, continue to have some of these sub-projects still recording CWIP and, you know, not in service. So they're all still part of the mix, too. And what we've seen is from 2021 to 2022, an increase in those revenue requirements from the existing programs of about $500,000, a little over $500,000. And again, that's largely due to the fact that we add another year of expenditures to our programs. And also there's the effect of programs going in partway in the year in 2021, and then they're in the whole year in 2022. So that's gonna drive an increase as well. We've already discussed the new projects. That's the $225,000 that we're adding in 2022. And then finally, the 2022 test year forecast has the net RECB revenue amount included in there, but it's a little bit less than what we had in 2021. So that actually is going to add some cost to our 22 test year, about $153,000. And that's reflecting our RECB forecast. And then lastly, we have a true-up, of course, that we've forecasted. That's the rollover from 2021, and that's actually $184,000 more or higher than the true-up was in 2021. So you add all those up, and you get your 22 revenue requirement of $1,382,000. That's kind of what's been happening since last year's TCR in kind of a nutshell. Commissioner, I think this might be the best time, if you had a question about RECB specifically, we could attempt to address that now.
So, yeah, thank you, Dave. So in the RECB, Yeah, I know there's a lot of different schedules, and there's the MTEP projects, and then there's got to be a separate category, I think, for what did we call that big round of projects, that the big region-wide?
Is it the LRTP, Commissioner?
No, that's the new one, the first round of those. The first, CapEx? Like 10 years ago.
CapEx?
Oh, the CapEx
no.
portfolio.
MVP. Or MVP?
No, it wasn't CapEx. It was
MVP?
MVPs, yeah, MVPs. Where can we see the breakdown of North Dakota's payments on the MVP's line, MVP line? Or, yeah, in the MVP portfolio, what our annual payment is for those?
Boy, I don't have the answer to that. I don't know. Ben, do you have any comment on that? Ben?
Looks like Ben is trying to speak, but he's not coming through. Sorry, Ben.
I believe the original ones are in Schedule 26A. And you also have a lump sum below the line, the project expense line, lumps in other regional cost share programs in Schedule 26. But I believe the originals are in allocated in 26A.
So I guess I'm not, staff, did you look at the breakdown, like what North Dakota is paying for MVP projects last year? Is that a number you can get?
Commissioner, this is Victor. I had done a little bit of research on this earlier this year, late last year, I suppose, at this point. At the time, what I was able to do is track down for NSP the specific projects that were part of those MVPs. So a lot of them were CapEx, so there was CapEx 2020 Brookings, Fargo, La Crosse, and I think I had totaled them up to a 2021 revenue requirement of about $5 million for North Dakota.
Okay.
And then the allocation, like the cost allocation formula for that, was a postage stamp based on load ratio share or something to that effect. Is that right?
That's correct.
So, and that's what you're saying resulted in the $5 million, approximately $5 million.
Well, I mean, these would be the MVPs that Xcel owns. Only, you know, so other MVP projects that Xcel doesn't own would go through those, and I'm not familiar with the MISO schedule numbers, but I think you guys were talking about them before I jumped on here, but yeah.
Do we pay a higher proportion for the ones they own? Shouldn't. I mean, the cost allocation is one formula.
Correct.
So, see, herein lies the problem. We have hundreds of millions of dollars being constructed in transmission lines through MISO, and we can't even get our hands around what we're being charged for it. We have all these talks and discussions and arguments over cost allocation, and then once it's approved, everything just vanishes into a filing like this, where it's virtually impossible for anybody to hold anyone accountable. So I have to have, now and going forward, a lot more transparency on MISO charges, what they are, how they relate to what's been approved and talked about. You know, what I want to see how this load ratio share cost allocation actually affects North Dakota ratepayers. And I don't know how to do that. I mean, I've got, you know, 75 pages of materials here that are give me any of that information.
This is Victor again. So I had found, again, this was from some research I did back in September for an unrelated thing, but I found a chart from MISO that gave a status report for the 2011 MVP portfolio. So it added up all of these individual projects for all utilities in the MISO footprint. It was about $6.5 billion between all of them. So that's investment amount, not revenue requirement amount. But, you know, if we wanted to look at a load.
That's fine, Victor. And I'm that's great. But I'm not interested in MISO's numbers because that isn't what customers are paying. I want to know from Xcel, who's one of the biggest advocates for this next LRTP wave that is going to be substantial. I want to know how they are currently collecting it, and I want to set up a way for them to report to us how this stuff is actually being paid for and what North Dakota customers are being charged for this, the MVP stuff, and then LRTP moving forward. And the other MISO charges, because more and more is going to be run through the MISO side of things, and we don't have any say over it. So I at least want to know, from a transparency standpoint, how much it is, what it is, how everything is flowing through, so that I can argue on MISO avenues, whether I think it's fair or not, or what, you know, moving forward, what to advocate for. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely, Commissioner.
This is Benjamin Hama from Excel. Can you hear me now or not?
Yes.
All right, sorry about that. I switched to my phone audio when I was losing connection and I wasn't getting through, I guess. So I can touch on it briefly just to talk about the MISO and the REC-B pieces and where they sit. There isn't a schedule in our filing that summarizes all those pieces, you know, listing everything from top to bottom. And so we can definitely work to pull something like that together. But I can at least kind of talk through where they are. And so now that we've rolled in a number of those projects, a number of those MVP projects into base rates, a lot of the revenue requirements, you know, and what we refer to as the all-in method, those revenue requirements are included in base rates. For any projects that were in service after December 31, 2020, those projects remained in the TCR rider that we filed here that we're discussing today. Chris Bubos, I would need your help to know if we truly have any of those MVP projects still remaining in the rider, or if we've moved them all into base. And then the other piece of that is the REC-B revenue and expenses that we get. And so the REC-B revenue that we get for all of those MVP projects, and so that's what the transmission customers, what we receive from transmission customers, we flow that back through the TCR. And so right now what's happening is, you know, you have projects in base rates and North Dakota customers are paying for those through base rates. And then whatever we get for transmission revenue, that flows back to North Dakota customers through the TCR in that REC-B revenue piece. So I don't know if that helps kind of explain where the pieces are. You know, I know it doesn't show literally the dollar amounts, but we can put something together to provide that dollar view.
I think that piece that you are talking about preparing would be really helpful, and we can, you know, have further conversations on that, how to pull the information that I feel is missing into another report.
I'm not hearing anything, so.
And don't feel alone, Julie. I agree with you completely on your request and on the need for this information.
Duly noted.
And Benj, do you think you could maybe talk, you spoke a little bit briefly about the all-in approach, and I know we've had conversations a little bit about other types of approaches. Do you think, as you assemble that information and analysis, that would provide more transparency?
I think the all-in approach provides the kind of the most transparency, because then you can show, you know, the total pieces, the total kind of the raw revenue requirement, if you will, and then the revenue coming from transmission owners. But I think there could be a schedule that shows, you know, each of the MVP projects, where they're being recovered, whether it's base rates or riders, and then what is the portion of RECB revenue that's coming back to kind of offset that from a North Dakota ratepayer perspective.
And what is the name of the other approach or approaches than all-in approach? The filing discussed the all-in approach being used, but I don't know what the alternatives are.
In previous rate cases, we've proposed other approaches, but those other approaches have additional layers of, you know, at least as I see it, additional layers of complexity, because then you have to get into separating the revenue requirement calculation into what is a retail cost versus what is a transmission customer cost, and using those MISO percentages to determine that on an annual basis. And so by showing it as all in, you get to see kind of the full revenue requirement picture and then the RECB revenue coming back. Whereas that other approach, you wouldn't see that revenue coming back, and you would have to each year look at those MISO responsibility percentages by project to limit the revenue requirement side of it to account for the fact that transmission customers are paying for part of that project. And that gets more complicated after projects are rolled into base rates, because now, you know, we would have the all-in method for those projects and base rates. And so then you'd have to continue to process that in the all-in method, and then existing or projects that are in the TCR, you could switch methods, but then you'd be using both methods until the next rate case where you could reset that.
Okay.
I think it's fair to say, Commissioner, I think the other method that Benj was alluding to is often called the split method versus the all-in. The split method recognizes there's a retail piece and then there's a MISO piece, but it is more complicated. And I think as long as, and maybe Benj can confirm this, but as long as FERC returns authorized are higher than state ones, this all-in method is going to be the most beneficial to customers.
Dave, right now the FERC approved ROE is higher than the North Dakota retail approved ROE, mm-hmm. and so therefore North Dakota customers get the benefit of that through that RECB revenue piece.
Correct.
And so I don't know if there's, Julie, did you have any more questions specifically on what we were talking about before? Because this rate is another question that I had.
I don't, Andy, thank you.
Okay, as I read the filings, it sounds like MISO had a very high ROE and FERC lowered it, and even that was appealed, and there was a hearing in November, I believe. Is the current rate, until we hear something different from FERC, is that just what we need to use in this case, or do we expect a different order to be coming out in the coming days, or is that one of the things that we just don't know when they're going to act?
So Benj or Rebecca, do you want to address some of the goings on with the FERC cases?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yep.
So we don't know exactly when they would or potentially change the current FERC approved rate. And so the current FERC approved rate is 10.02 with a 50 basis point adder if you are part of an ISO. And so because we're part of MISO, the transmission formula rate and these various GG and MM projects do have a 10.52% ROE. There are outstanding appeals, but at this point, I don't see anything in the near term that would change that rate.
Okay.
So I will move on to our last slide. In our original application, we contemplated a January 1 effective date for the 22 TCR. But given that we're now looking at a later date, we're providing with this slide a couple of the alternatives, either a March 1 or an April 1 effective date. If the new rate's effective on March 1, then the current and lower TCR rate will stay in place, obviously, for January and February. And we're only collecting about, around 26,000 roughly a month. So that whittles away a little bit of the 2022 revenue requirement. But if we were to put a rate in effect on March 1, you can see that the adjusted revenue requirement would be about $1,328,000. We divide by the remaining sales for the remaining 10 months, and we come up with a revised rate. And we do the same exercise on an April 1 effective date. And you can see that the average bill impact does go up 9 cents under a March effective date and about 15 cents under the April 1 effective date versus, had it gone in on January 1. So there is a little bit of a change there.
And this question may not impact very much, but I want to head off. Either I'm not understanding something or there's a mistake here. Okay. Essentially, this information was provided on the filing that you did on the 6th of January.
Yes.
And so I'm looking at the 10-month revenue requirement of 1.328. But then I look back at your third slide, and it showed a revenue requirement of 1.382. And actually, this chart was in this January filing, and then later in the page in the summary, it used a 1.382. So I'm not understanding
the
difference between those two.
The 1,382 is the annual revenue requirement for 2022. And what we're looking at with this slide is a recognition that if we have a March 1 effective date, in January and February, we're still recovering with the current TCR rate, which is very low. We're still recovering something, so that after 2 months, we now have gone from 1,382 down to 1,328 because we've had 2 months of recovery. Does that help at all? And so then we start from that point and go, okay, how much sales is there in the remaining 10 months? Because that's what we're going to recover this over and calculate our new rate.
Okay. Now that does make sense. Thank you.
Okay. But that's pretty much the extent of our filing and the presentation this morning. So if there are any other questions or one question that I would have is the commission looking for a follow-up on the Rec B question immediately or as part of this case, or is this something that in general we can provide at some point down the road? Or
that is my question too, and I think I am okay with moving forward with this with the understanding that we're going to get that. But Julia, if you want that first, I am also okay with holding off on this if you think that it should be something that we're able to evaluate as part of this rider.
Tell me again the timing for when this has to be approved to get implemented by whatever date, March 1st, is that what we're looking at?
They have two options. This is about a 9 cent, I think, increase if we are able to move yet this month and implement this on March 1st. if we delay a little bit and hold off until April 1st implementation, then that 9-cent increase goes to 15 cents. So we're not talking about huge jumps, but the longer we delay, the more the increase is.
And I'll add that the company doesn't need a lot of time to implement whatever is ordered. So if that's any help too, I mean, we could implement a March 1 on just a few days' notice. So,
but by the time you accumulate that information that's been requested on these MISO project charges, and then we evaluate it and study it and understand it, I'm thinking that might be something that takes a little time.
Sure.
If we can set a deadline for gathering that information on the MISO charges, I'm comfortable moving forward. I just don't want that to be kind of, put on the back burner and then, you know, we're in the same pickle next year and we haven't thought through how to evaluate this stuff. And plus, I want to be able to use that information in discussions about the LRTP those are happening, you know, on a regular basis now, as a similar cost allocation methodology is being proposed for this next round, much bigger round of projects. So
Dave or someone from staff, what's a good time frame for when you can have that?
Well, I was wondering if we could just work with staff after this hearing to come up with something that meets Commissioner Fedarczyk's needs. And I can't speak for us how long it would take us to compile that data, but maybe we could work on that in the coming days here.
So sure. I'm thinking that this would be a good topic for an informal, just on its own, for us to learn where we're at with those things. And I'm sure there's going to be some lessons learned for the SPC side, the SPP side of the equation too. So am I understanding, are you okay with moving forward with this rider, but in the company will work with staff to come up with a pretty quick time frame of getting that information back to us and setting an informal on that topic specifically?
That's a great idea. I like that approach.
Okay. Is there anything else specific on this rider case?
Well, I've got one question here. Are we just looking for MVP charges, or are we also looking for other charges, more of a holistic MISO look? For instance, network upgrades. You'll see that the Helena substation to Scott County substation MISO interconnection is a new project that's in southern Minnesota. One of those wind facilities is owned by Xcel. The other three are owned by external entities and or developers. So they all kind of share in their network upgrades, if I understand that project. However, I could be wrong. So I'm wondering if there would be interest in not only looking at MVP but and that schedule, but you know, layering back some of the some of the other MISO charges.
Sure, I think how the network upgrades flow through would also be enlightening.
Agreed. Okay. On this case, are there any objections to the evidence produced becoming part of the official record? And I'm talking about not only the slide presentation, but the oral discussion?
No objection.
Okay. No objection.
Okay. That evidence will become part of the record upon which a decision will be made in this case. Are there any other matters for the record? If not, this informal hearing is closed. And Julie, on just a scheduling note, are you
anticipating, Randy?
On a scheduling note, are you anticipating